kids, it's time to get some SML podcast all up in that.
Is that your cry for help over there? Do we need to call the police?
I should be concerned. You can call the police. There ain't no cops in this town. Ain't nobody would come here.
Hello, I got a bag of corn cobs. If you can get over to this address, it's two towns over. I said I got a bag of corn cobs. Get me your car. You need help.
Root beer needs help on what they should eat for tonight.
We Ruby. Had Korean barbecue, and Necco I think everybody wafers. Should have yeah, Korean barbecue.
That's an interesting just combination.
Need a handful of Necco wafers.
Should. Yeah. Necco wafers are delicious. That's, I guess it's just a
Necco
it's a
wafers culture. Are fucking disgusting. I think less know. Of you as a person now. Like, I am not fucking around. They are terrible.
You didn't think much of me as a person in the first place.
Oh, I thought highly of you before today. But now it's like, holy shit, you like Necco wafers? I can't hang out with you. You might have Necco wafers on your person.
Death, like, this is how it all ends.
There's a guy doing a eulogy. Like, Purnell was a great guy. Helped people in need when he could. Had a lot of fun hobbies and just overall kind soul. But that son of a bitch like Necco wafers and fuck that shit. He's a piece of shit. Like, wow.
And most people would agree with me. I think no jury would convict. Why'd you do him like that? He likes Necco wafers.
Oh, okay. Not here. Guilty.
I do believe that most people would agree with that. I am in the minority for Necco wafers. Probably oh. Jordan Almonds too. But
who I hurt you.
I like Jordan. I like Jordan Almonds. I don't even mind Starlight Mints, though. Admittedly, if they come in a bag of candy, they're the last to go because I just don't want to eat them. But they're not bad. They're just mints, you know. But what I don't eat are Almond Joys and coconut clusters. And I don't eat those Samoas from Girl Scout cookies.
Yeah, me neither. Yeah.
See, okay, so there's some common ground here. I just happen to like Necco wafers, too.
Oh, yeah, you're fucked up, man. You are fucked up.
I'm messed up so much. That's a great picture.
It sounds like you just don't like that, like, shaved coconut.
I don't like shaved coconut, but I'm trying to think of some candies I don't like that also don't have coconut in them. And this, I'm drawing a blank. I just like lots of fucking candy. I like licorice, even black licorice. I'm okay with black.
Yeah, I like black licorice.
That I'll do. Yeah, all day.
Yeah.
Like, I don't like licorice, but I understand. I understand the enjoyment of them.
They're great. Like, it brings a flavor that you don't generally get out of your treats.
Nothing is worse, though, as a kid expecting chocolate licorice and getting black licorice.
I will go with that to an extent, except for when it's got coconut in it, because nothing's worse than coconut. But, you know.
Coconut licorice.
Say, oh, God, that sounds like some kind of Satan treat. But, like, if I do know I'm getting black licorice, I'm okay with it. But I agree. If you're getting flim flam, it kills you. But also,
usually you can smell the anise on it. Like, it shouldn't be a surprise at this point in your life.
Yeah, but if you just see it at a distance and you get close and then you realize what it is, it sinks in. It hurts so much more.
I remember a candy I hate that is not coconut, and I only had it in the last 20 years. Fucking Turkish Delights. That stank ass candy. That is garbage. And the worst thing about it was I had it hyped up for years because Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, you had that kid who betrayed Azra of the Lion and his entire family because the witch offered him Turkish Delight. Made you think it was the best damn candy in the world. Like, I can't wait to someday have this magical treat. And I came fucking across Edmund. It is fucking gross. I'm like, this, I will never look at Edmund the same way ever again. You whiny bastard. Like this.
Oh, I never Jesus. Saw the movie, so.
I read the book because that was one of the ones we had to do in school.
I saw a really cheap animated version of the movie on VHS back in the 80s.
I probably saw that one too now that you mention it. I think it aired on TV, actually.
Root Beer says Turkish Delight is delicious.
See, there's always someone that likes some nasty ass candy. You got me.
Yeah, you're that person, Pernell. You like Necco wafers.
I just acknowledged it. I'm the guy with Necco wafers and root beers that way with Turkish delights. Everyone likes something. Oh, like there's
the,
I know what these are. This is Christmas candy.
Yeah, it's like a
bad Turkish delight.
It was like, you were a bad child. That's what that was. Like, hey, Merry Christmas. I'm Turkish delight. How did I fuck up that bad? What did I do?
I betrayed my family for Christmas.
Common Christmas candies.
The one I hate, and you always see it on Easter the most, is malt balls / robin eggs.
Ah, yes.
Also I love malt balls. Whoppers are great.
Nasty, you just like nasty balls. Cookie stuff.
I do love balls. I love balls in my mouth.
As a kid. Now as an adult, I'm like, I don't know what the fuck was wrong with me that I ate so many fucking Whoppers.
Yeah, Whoppers too. I ate them one time when I was like 6 years old, I think, and I got sick. I don't think I ate enough of them to get sick. I think it was just a coincidence. But ever since then, like, they just trigger my gag reflex to smell the non-chocolate part of them. Like, that crunchy, powdery, like, nastiness. And I can eat them without throwing up, but I don't want to.
I can eat them without
throwing up. I would rather throw up than eat them.
Damn, Tim. Like, I prefer the feeling of my testicles trying to escape through my mouth than eating a Necco wafer. Damn.
I have to keep all this, don't I?
You probably... I can tell you every time to just record all of it, because you're always going to be like, man, I wish I kept that.
Yeah, but I don't know where to start it. Like, because I should just answer the call like, what's up, everybody? This is the SNL podcast.
You should.
You got to make sure everybody's sound works. We can all hear each other.
Yeah, but instead, you guys go off on tangents that I have to keep in the show. So we're like, I don't know.
People pay.
Maybe you should just start the show now before it gets worse.
We already started. This is the show. We already kept all this.
Well,
it's the big show. It's the big entertainment package tonight.
If we knew you were recording, then it would be all like, I like all the candy. Have nothing to talk about.
What do you think, Tim?
No disagreements.
I'm all about the division. Like, your taste of candy is garbage. Like, well, shit. That means I'm a hit online. Yeah. If people hate you on the internet, you're doing something right. Pernell likes Necco wafers. Fuck that guy. Yeah, keep tuning in, though.
I'm saying it.
I want to.
Like, the more you say it, the more real it is, and the more it stings.
My next birthday, I'm going to bake a cake and just crush Necco wafer dust all over the frosting. It's just going to be great.
My gosh. Somebody call somebody.
I'm more Necco fan.
Just don't get any of those Whoppers near me.
So we have not come across a single universal candy that we all, at least everyone in this chat and Scum and Twitch, does not like. We have not come across one. Because someone here likes Samoas. Someone here likes Neccos. Someone here likes Turkish Delight. What is a candy you just straight up hate? Someone here likes Whoppers. So we have nothing.
We have nothing in common. And yet here we all are on a podcast.
Do you guys have ghost pepper McChicken sandwiches at McDonald's? I don't think so.
It's not a candy, but I would eat that. I would
ghost pepper candy. How about that?
I think a ghost pepper candy.
There is ghost pepper jelly. You can get it on Amazon.
Ghost pepper bubblegum.
I was looking at it earlier.
I did not have to eat that because I had a Bomberman competition for it, and the loser had to eat it, and I kicked ass at Bomberman, so ha-ha! But I would have succumbed to it in the event that I just happened to blow at Bomberman. So I would have eaten it, but I have no desire to. Put it that way.
Amazon's on my shit list.
Because, like, when you think of, like, ghost pepper candies and stuff, like...
Why are you mad at Amazon?
No, let Pernell finish.
Oh.
I'm just... Wow. Damn. Oh, I was on.
I don't even know what you were talking about anymore.
You mentioned Amazon. I wanted to make my displeasure with Amazon known before Pernell went too far away from it.
We were talking about ghost pepper candies. And I was like,
yeah, and she said there was some on Amazon. She was looking on Amazon. Do you not pay attention to her?
I listen to Cole all the time. She just hates my guts, but I like Cole.
I am a beacon of joy and love and kindness, and I don't hate anybody.
No.
That's not true.
Well, all I was going to say is that goes like so those hot candies and foods, the way people usually get through those, like, you know, you put it in your mouth, you try to get it down your throat as fast as possible so it doesn't, like, sit, you know, building your mouth with saliva.
But that with sounds gum, like something else, not candy.
Well, maybe that too. I don't know. But, but with ghost pepper gum, it's gum by nature, you don't swallow. You just keep chewing it, which means you're just kind of, it's like an eternal pain. Like, I can't fathom the pleasure of having ghost pepper gum. Like, it's just, I guess if you don't want to go to bed for the next 2 days, you can do that. But not so much there. I haven't. Okay, Amazon. Why is it so shitty?
Amazon are dicks.
Is that why they're shitty? Because they're penises?
I ordered some stuff over the weekend, and they're like, it will be there Tuesday, guaranteed. By 10 p.m., it'll be there. Shit still hasn't shipped.
What was it, Prime?
Yeah.
Oh, in that case, yeah, bitch away. Yeah,
those sons of bitches.
If you go to their chat and complain, they'll give you a refund. And I know, because I do it all the time, because I had, like, $300 worth of art shit that was supposed to be here, and they didn't deliver it even before the ice storm hit. And so then, because they didn't deliver it when it was scheduled to be delivered before the ice storm, that meant it was 3 more weeks before I fucking did get it.
Jesus.
And so, like, 3 days after the ice storm hit, I got on that chat and I was like, y'all done fucked up. And they had to refund every bit of it. And then I still ended up getting the stuff.
God.
3 weeks later. Yeah, I was like, y'all fucked up. You told me it was going to be here. It wasn't here. I purposely ordered some of the things to be there before the storm.
No.
And, like, I was paying more for things that said they were going to deliver by that date. And then they didn't get there by that date.
Get them, Cole. Get them.
They gave me my money back.
Yay.
Yay.
Like when we That's got like our money back for our TV stand. That's an old story. I probably told that years ago. Why are we talking about this stuff? Did you guys hear about Game Pass?
Yeah.
Game Pass.
Fucking Game Pass. We'll talk about news on the next episode like we usually do, but holy shit, Game Pass.
I mean, but Game Pass has always been awesome. So it's almost like, what's the news? Game Pass is still good.
I did a quadruple take because of one of the games that was in the announcement. Was so startling.
Yeah, I'm gonna guess that was fucking Octopath Traveler.
Yes, that was it, because I was like, I didn't know that was on Xbox.
Surprise.
And then I was like, was that on Xbox?
No. Nope. Surprise. I'm like, guessing they're going to announce it for Xbox and PlayStation on Thursday during the Square Enix conference.
I hope so. I hope it is coming to Xbox if it's going to be on Game Pass.
It's on Game
Pass. No, we fucking bootleg that shit.
Or they're like, we'll let you play it on your Switch, even though you're on Game Pass.
I mean, it is on PC.
Get the icon.
Brunel, turn off speakerphone.
Why?
We've been recording. Turn off speakerphone.
Speakerphone is more enjoyable. It makes me feel like a big man.
Yeah, but you cut out when other people talk.
Oh, that's
you know what else might make you feel like a big man? Using your goddamn microphone.
Oh, that is true. I do.
Oh, wow. Did you just come from Minnesota with that one? With the microphone?
You know what? Of all the things I say funny, phone is one of the weirdest ones that I can't explain.
I like
it. Have that Minnesota
Cole with the
microphone.
She was like, Parnell, you should be using your microphone. And you should have been like, oh, yeah, that is true. Thanks for bringing that up, Cole. But instead, you're like, you just said phone.
Wait, we got to go back to shitting on Parnell. Parnell, use a microphone.
Parnell, neck wavers are garbage. Fuck you.
Hey, Parnell, stop drinking that tea. Wait, that's a good thing. I'm keep drinking my damn tea. In your faces.
I want tea.
Yeah, what do you guys think of Octopath Traveler coming to Xbox Game Pass, along with fucking Undertale and Outriders is going to be there on day one now? Like, holy shit.
They have seen that getting the good stuff day one on Game Pass leads to much hype and excitement and trending on Twitter. And they're like, yes, let's do that. Spare no expense.
I'm mainly just surprised it's coming to those consoles. But then again, the weird thing about it is that Octopath has been, you know, exclusive on Switch for so long that you almost forget Square did it. It's almost like it came on Nintendo. So once
was it a Square game?
Yeah, I didn't
know that.
And it's also been on PC.
The thing is, I never even noticed when it's on. I feel like everything's on PC, so I just kind of blocked that out. But like, what ends up happening is like, once you get through your, that's not rude. It's just the general expectation that everything's on PC. How is that? That doesn't even make sense.
Stop hating.
It's just in. Pernell hates PC gamers.
Pernell hates PC gamers. Why is that? Why does
Pernell prefer Necco wafers over PC gamers?
What gives you the impression that Pernell hates PC gamers? Because he acknowledges that every game. That makes no sense.
Pernell, PC culture is coming after you.
There it is. It was only a matter of time, you know. Me and my social justice sword and my social justice shield. You know, I'm coming after him. I'm coming. Look out, bitches, because I don't play unless it's a video game.
We need PC principal from South Park over here.
That ain't very PC at all. Hey, bro.
Yeah, I did not expect Octopath to hit Xbox. Like, if they would have announced it for PlayStation Plus, I would have been like, yeah, that makes sense. But announcing it for Game Pass, it blew my mind. I didn't see Square ever releasing that on Xbox.
My question is, why would any game surprise you coming to Game Pass? I get the console itself, but it's generally open season on Game Pass.
Like, Square Enix as a publisher generally shits on Xbox for reasons
when
that are
when it comes to their RPGs.
They've been loading
true, fair.
That's what they say.
I always assume there's money involved. I always assume that the shitting on them is money involved every time. Like, it's probably like someone saying, hey, we'll give you X amount of dollars, just give it to us. Or we'll give you X amount of dollars, just give it to them. But if there's no money in it, like with Octopath, they may have had like a financial exclusive deal for that game. Like, this can only be on the Switch because, you know, we're paying you for it or something like that. And now that open season's up, Microsoft likes money. So it's like, I'm going to release it on everything because fuck, pay us. So, I don't know. Like,
maybe they did a deal because, I mean, I feel like PlayStation Plus offerings have been very good lately in general, but they also had like the Final Fantasy VII remake this month. And maybe Microsoft was like, hey, what if we also did a somewhat high profile RPG for free this month, though it's longer than this month? You know, that's, I'm just, nah.
I would imagine contracts like those are in place long before, though. So.
Maybe, maybe not. Who
maybe
knows?
Not. Maybe Outriders just came together last minute.
I don't know about Outriders. That Outriders was probably coming that way, I feel like. Because you put something out there, you know, on Plus or Game Pass, and that's like an online shootery game, right? You want to build up a base with that.
Yeah.
I just only feel like every game that can that is online and releases on a system should go to. It just makes sense for it to get on Game Pass. If anything, the developer itself should push for getting on Game Pass just by virtue of that alone. Like, we want people to play this game if it's accessible to the audience in a way that will make them want to do it with minimal, you know, blockades to entry. We'll do that, and that's pretty much how you go about pulling that off. Just make it free,
yeah.
But. I mean, it's like,
so
I mean,
do you have Game Pass, Pernell?
Of course I don't. I have no need for it right now.
But do you have Necco wafers?
I wish. Fuck, I'd be eating them right now on the show.
On my wish list.
Like, because Joe and I were actually talking about that earlier. It's like, I get that Game Pass is great. I just, me personally, have no use for it because between my backlog, games I generally want to get anyway, and reviews that I do, like, I will never utilize. Like, I had PS Plus games that I never played. Pretty much, I don't think I've ever utilized a PS Plus release. And I think I may have played one or two Game Pass releases over the entire time I had it with Game Pass Ultimate. Like, I just never use it. So
I played Rocket League and Fall Guys from PS Plus. I know that.
I've become Plus game? Yeah. Both of them were.
I forgot about that. Like, I played like I said, like I did on Xbox, I did doing Burnout on Blazing Chrome at one point, and that, now I'm having trouble remembering what was the second one. I did that one voxel game that was on there for a little while, with the little bunny guy on the cover, the little blue hood.
Riverbond.
I played a little bit of that, and I played Blazing Chrome on Game Pass. That's pretty much it. I left
both those games.
I'm sorry, one more game, because a friend of mine was playing, and he's like, you should hang out with us for a bit. And I played it once, and it was like Deep Rock Galactic or something.
That's a good one.
Oh, yeah, I remember that game.
It was good, but also it drove me nuts for some reason. I can't quite put my finger on why, but it didn't grab me like it grabbed all my friends. And yeah, I was like, you know, I'm not going to knock it if you guys play it, but it's just not happening for me. But with that said, though, it is still a quality product. I can admit that wholeheartedly without difficulty.
Yeah, also, I love Game Pass. Yeah. I am excited for all the additions. But you mentioned reviews. We do have a lot of those. Should we get into those?
Probably, yes.
We can if you want.
Because, right, Purnell, you're starting things off with Saviors of Sapphire Wings and Stranger of Sword City Revisited. Developed by Experience, published by NIS America, released March 16th on Switch and PC for $49.99. A fallen hero is reincarnated 100 years after being defeated by the Overlord of Darkness. Bond with allies, explore dungeons, and vanquish monsters in this RPG gem. Purnell, tell us about this bundle package from NIS.
It's kind of funny because for as much as the game contains, there's not a lot to actually say about it. Well, aside from purchase it, because you should.
That's helpful. That's
strangers. No, well, it's the truth. I'll tell you. I mean, because one is narrative based, but the reason why is because this type of game. So anyway, it is a dumb experience. The company has a bit of a pedigree for releasing really good dungeon crawlers. The one that most got me into their arms was one called Demon Gaze a few years ago. And while all of their dungeon crawlers that I've played since then kind of follow a similar template, they always kind of have a unique element to each one that makes it kind of stand away from its companions. In the case of Saviors of Sapphire Wings, one thing I liked about this game that the other ones don't have is that while most of their other dungeon crawling games involve you creating characters and they're just kind of just, you know, battle characters without personalities or anything like that, in this game, every character is an actual character, like they're people. When you first start the game, you are reincarnated as from the hero that died 100 years ago battling the great evil, blah, blah, blah. But they do give you a little bit of customization options there. They let you choose a portrait for that person amongst a sea of individual ones. Not a ton, just a few, which thankfully I honestly appreciate, which I'll get into later. They let you choose their starting class, all of which involves you getting, you know, just determines the skills and magic spells you can learn as you level up your character. It also lets you choose a soul type. And the soul types are basically the way in which your base stats will lay out. So you might want to choose like a elf soul if you want to have like good magic. You want the champion soul if you want, you know, base high level vitality and attack, blah, blah, blah. But then once you get into the game proper, you are faced with the aspect of having to go from like environment to environment and procuring a series of quests, usually revolving around like helping the citizenry in the area to contain evil that has polluted it, you know, because over the 100 years since you passed away, evil spread throughout the kingdom, and now you're trying to push it back and reclaim it. So you're usually going through the process of like helping environments deal with the repercussions of your loss against the Dark Lord earlier. But during those travels, you'll sometimes meet new characters, and these characters become members of what's called the Squires of the Round, the recreation of the legendary team that is meant to vanquish the Dark Lord. Now, normally games like this will have aspects of bonding. Usually, like think of how like Persona has like the social links where you hang out with your guys enough and they like you and you get new skills and stuff.
Yeah.
But in this game, I kind of like that they added a bonus element to it, like it's actually narrative based. So one of the reasons why the Dark Lord won in the previous iteration was because he has an attack called Oma's Impact. And what he does when he uses it is he basically enslaves anybody who comes in contact with it, essentially making them slaves to him, and then basically makes everyone kill each other. So he is powerful enough that the more powerful your allies are, the worse it will be when the attack goes off because they'll just start killing each other. So with that's this iteration, OP.
They should nerf that.
They don't, but there's a way to get around it in the sense of the game's context where if you form strong enough bonds and relationships, you can push back against Oma's Impact and be able to withstand it. And as you play the game, there are certain enemies that can even still use it against you, too. Like, it's not just the final guy. Like, his generals can use it sometimes, too. And there's ways to push against it aside from the bonds leading up to the final one. But nonetheless, you got to pay attention to that. So you're having dinner with your units and you're talking to your units, building up boosts and bonds to close, to make them stronger against this impact. And as you get to certain bond levels, you unlock union skills, which can be used in combat.
Yeah, unions.
Oh, dear God. Yes, we all support unions here. Fuck Amazon. So.
Okay, Amazon, give me my Mountain Dew.
But, yeah, so essentially when you do battles and you get through a certain number of rounds, typically you build up union points, and then you can use the built-up points to activate union skills. So, and those are all learned by bonding with your companions, which is worth it. Now, the dungeon crawling is basic dungeon crawling. There's really not a ton to talk about there. You can walk around dungeons, complete the map, fight monsters, you know, level up your dudes, use skills or spells. That's not the right home about, though. I will say, just straight off the bat, it is quality play. Like, it's not bad dungeon crawling. It's just dungeon crawling. It's everything around the dungeon crawling that's great, though. I like the idea that when you're back at the base, you are able to use items in your inventory, like weapons and stuff, and a furnace to build up a general bar that when you max out certain levels of it, you get a permanent bonus to your entire party. Ooh. So it doesn't really behoove you to sell your weapons and stuff because you want to dump them in the magic furnace instead. There's also a light alchemy thing that you can do where you take certain ingredients, slam them together to get better versions of that ingredient type, and then make foods and stuff that your party members like to form bonds with them. It's a good game. Like, I enjoy my time playing it, and I like the fact that as you play it more, there's little bits of additional elements that open up for your party, such as the ability to give them all subclasses. So that even though those characters come in, I forgot to mention that too. Even when you meet the new characters and they join your party, they kind of get the perk that the main character had, where even though they clearly make it obvious that our character is meant to be a certain thing, like this princess is a paladin, clearly, you are still allowed to say, you know what, fuck that. I don't want her to be a paladin. I want her to be a wizard. You can give her that. Though, personally, I did not. I decided I wanted to keep them as the classes that they seemed like they were meant to have, so I left them as they were. But I think that's really cool that they still let you do that if you need to. However, if you do feel like you need to absolutely customize your party to the freaking hilt, I recommend saving that for Stranger of Sword City when you eventually get to it, because I consider that to be the expert version of pretty much Savior Sapphire Wing. The best way to describe it is to say Sapphire Wings is like, hey, so you like dungeon crawls, but you haven't played one in a while? Give this one a shot. It's not too difficult. It's got challenges, but it's not going to break your balls. Stranger of Sword City says, so you like RPGs? You think you're good at them? Fuck you. I'm going to break your balls. And that's what it does. Because that game goes to the hilt with like various gameplay systems and just general customization and the elements. Like, if you're not planning for what you're doing, you're going to get your ass handed to you. Though I do like the general premise of the game a lot more than Sapphire Wings, because it sets you up with a pretty cool little mystery that makes you want to progress, in that your main character is somebody who is on a plane flying from Japan to like freaking, like, I don't know, the US or something. I forget where it was flying to. And it goes through a portal and crash lands in a wasteland called the Mausoleum of Metal in a whole other world. And apparently this happens a lot. There's a weird connection between the two worlds that was opened up through a specific event in history that results in artifacts and sometimes people being ejected from our world into this world. But when the people end up in that world, they are considered something called strangers, and they have abilities that people that live there don't actually have. And there's a whole like war going on between them and like these dark forces. And there are also dark forces that want to capitalize on their abilities. And of course you're brawling, but,
what the fuck? I am having a stroke right now. What?
It's fucking great. It is really good. Exactly. It's like, it's just a cool premise to me. But once you get past the premise, you're talking about the gameplay. This one is more true to dungeon crawling in that, even though there are story-based characters, everyone in your party is character-crafted from, like, quote-unquote, a guild. So you build your characters, choose your classes, give them their bonus points that they start out with for their stats, and then from there you kind of press on. However, unlike union skills in the other game, in this case there's, like, a sort of lineage skill system where as you get lineage points, you can spend them on like a sort of grid that lets you get new skills. So there's a lot that goes into this game. Like, it's a heavy game. In addition to that, there's also life points in addition to dying. So you can only die a certain number of times, you know, because typically with games, you can die and then you resurrect yourself or whatever. But in this game, if you die too many times without healing your resurrection points, your character will just fade away. So they die for good. Yes, right. So don't fuck up or you're screwed or something. But they do give you ways around it, but it's just basically still one of those things where, like, you can't just, like, dive deep into a dungeon and be okay with your guys dying over and over again, because you only get to get a certain number of deaths in you. But it's just such a – this whole package is just really freaking awesome. Like, and the first and foremost, worth mentioning to people who aren't in the know, Stranger of Sword City came out in the States on the Vita back in, like, 2014. But then, like, right after that version came out, they announced in Japan that the one that we just got on the Switch was coming out later with all these added features, including new classes, more dungeons, more characters and stuff like that. And everybody with their recently purchased Vita cup was like, what the fuck is this shit? So it's kind of nice.
Xbox has the original version too. So,
oh, the Xbox got the same one. Yep. I think it's one thing that the Xbox had that was nice. I think they had that, the cool original art though, before they animated. Cause like there was like anime style art. And then it was also like classic RPG art.
Yeah, I think they have both.
Awesome. I love that art style, the classic style.
How does this game handle the two game thing? Is there like a title screen that you get to select which one you're going to?
That's literally it, actually. All right. Yeah. So on the actual like system, you know, game tab, it's both games on it, slit through the middle. And then when you collect it and go into the game, it says choose. It just says choose your game. Like it's a no frills label. Like, Sages of Sapphires or Sword City. Easy and then enough. Once you pick it, it has new, load, switch game or options. So if you accidentally pick the wrong game, you can just switch back. Now, with that said, I think once you're in the game proper, you got to close it out. Because I didn't really find a way to, you know, back out and go back to the other game or anything. So that's no big deal there. If you should be trying to play the game once you load something. No. You're that indecisive.
Bless you.
Hazuda. But with that said, though, like, I feel as though people bought Sword City by itself for the price they're offering for this game with two games in it, and it still holds up. Like, it's not like the game somehow lost its edge over time. It's still great. It's a good game. The value is all over the place. I still have mine coming in the mail, because even though I got the review, because I was like, no, I want this because experience this good shit and they deserve my money. So if I already ponied up for the game that I reviewed, and as Joe can attest, if I review a game that sucks and I bought it, I will cancel that shit before it goes out in the mail. I have no shame in that. So I kept this game, which means I'm speaking from my wallet when I say this is worth a purchase and cool. Then some.
All right. So officially you buy it?
I definitely buy it.
Cool. All right. Next game to talk about is called Heaven Dust, developed by One Gruel Studio, published by Monster Couch and Indie Nova, released March 12th on Xbox One for $9.99. When you awake, you find yourself in a mansion. Where was the secret research center? Is now a maze full of horrible zombies and deadly traps. You'll have to escape by overcoming your fears, collecting items, solving puzzles, and revealing the cruel truth. Tim, tell us about Heaven Dust.
This game's like Resident Evil, except from a different angle. I mean, it fucking is. This game, it has kind of like an overhead-ish, like three-quarters view perspective. So, you know, you can see the room that your character is in. You can see the rooms around the one your character is in. But you spawn in. The game has like no preamble. Just kind of drops you in a room. A safe room, you can tell, because there's safe room music and there's an item box there. And you have to find your way out of this room, you know, find the key to get out. And basically, then you start traversing this mansion, which has zombies about. There's zombies. Something went wrong. There's notes around to tell you, kind of give you some backstory as to what went wrong. I mean, when I say it's like Resident Evil, like literally after I got out of that room and the next room I went in, there was a key with a sword on it. That's a thing in the first Resident Evil. There's sword keys and shield keys and shit.
Yeah.
So it's like literally the same fucking item. There is the sword key. Your healing items in this game, believe it or not, there are herbs. There are green herbs, and there are also red herbs, which you can combine with the green herbs in order to make a stronger herb. You look at your status screen, and there is a little, like, what do you want to say? Like the fucking heartbeat monitor thing going on, and it's green, and when you get hurt it goes to yellow and red, and you have 6 inventory slots, and you if you have too much things, you have to go back to the item box and put them in. Once you pick up a gun, you have to combine it with a pile of bullets in order to load the gun.
I feel weird because I'm actually sounding like I actually want to play this.
So, yeah, kind of the arc I went through initially, I was like, oh my god. Like, they are just ripping the shit off of Resident Evil here. And then I was like, you know what? Like, if Capcom had gone ahead and made, like, a chibi overhead Resident Evil, I would be 100% into it. So
this is that, basically.
Yeah, so let me shake off some cynicism here a little bit as I start playing through it. So, yeah, it's Resident Evil trappings. You have limited ammunition, limited resources. One of the big things that makes it easier, like what kind of makes it like a baby's first Resident Evil, is that the view that you have, and that you can see more than one room at a time. Like, if you're in a room, you can see a zombie in the next room, and you know where he is in the room and what he's doing and that he's there, even if you've never been in that room before. It doesn't, like, they could have made the game more challenging and more horror-y if they had some kind of, like, a line of sight mechanic in it, you know, so you couldn't actually see things until you opened a door or, you know, were looking straight down a hallway. But they don't do that. And I don't think it's necessarily a knock against the game that they don't have that. It just makes it easier. Just bottom line, it just makes it easier and a less stressfully terrifying experience,
which I'm completely good with,
which is fine. Yeah, that is not a bad thing. So it kind of lets you play in a Resident Evil ish space without having to deal with Resident Evil ish levels of stress. And it doesn't have tank controls, so there's also that going for it.
That got Cole's attention. No tank controls.
Yeah, that's important.
So, yeah, you start exploring rooms and picking up keys and solving puzzles, which, you know, there will be clues and notes strewn about as to codes for safes. And, you know, you're picking up oddball items, statues and paintings that you need to hang onto the walls. And something else that's cool, usually in a survival horror game, you want to avoid enemies and conserve ammo. When you kill an enemy in this game, like permanently, they drop a token, and there's like vending machines around that you can use to buy like maps. And there's like a speed walking upgrade and clues regarding secrets. And I think that's a pretty neat addition to the game, to the genre. Well, I guess Resident Evil 4 had a merchant, famous shopkeeper, but still, it's neat that it's very specifically like, oh, if you use your bullets to kill a zombie, you get one of these things that you can use to perhaps get something else. It's a pretty, you know, breezy experience. It's not too challenging. Like, none of the puzzles I felt were like all that difficult. Like, I did have some trouble with the traps in some areas where it was just kind of hard to see what was going on with like the game's perspective, and there was like spikes coming out of the floor, and they kept like dinging me as I was trying to time myself running over them. But you know, it's pretty solid. It is definitely like a little rough around the edges in terms of just the kind of the whole product, but it's like $10, so it's kind of like, well, what do you expect, I guess?
At that $10, what are you thinking about it?
Yeah, I'm thinking it's probably worth it for $10 if you're looking for a kind of cute little Resident Evil style experience. It doesn't bring too many new ideas to the game, but it is kind of like simple and fun enough on its own that you can, you know, burn through it on an afternoon or an evening and probably feel pretty good about it.
Cool. Cole, any questions? Sounds like something you might be interested in, so I thought I'd try to involve you.
Thank you. Yeah, I appreciate it, but no, I'm good.
Like, don't fucking talk to me.
It's not my time.
Next up is Pacer, developed and published by R8 Games, released March 9th on Xbox One for $39.99. Pacer is high-octane anti-gravity racing at its most destructive. Customize your craft and weapons, then engage in campaign, single-player race, or compete against your rivals in explosive online multiplayer for the ultimate combat racing experience. Pernell, tell us about your time with Pacer.
So, Pacer, I want to say it's like the general response of, like, it's pretty much like Wipeout, if someone did Wipeout in the present, but I think it did a few things differently.
Just remaking old PlayStation games here today.
Yeah.
That is true. I didn't think about that. We just had the Resident Evil, then we got Wipeout. But there are a few things I liked about this that, you know, Wipeout didn't do, in a sense, but also some weird things. So at its core, yes, this is a very fast racing game where you control a hovering ship that rockets down the track at crazy high speeds. It's got sharp turns and winding paces, speed boosters and pickups. But something that I think is interesting about this game that is a little different is how the ships themselves function. So you don't really you pick from a number of ships, like five ships, but that's really just the basis of it. Because beyond that, you also have to perform or select a variation of modifiers. So typically in games like this, you are driving on a track and there are like weapon icons. And when you pick them up, either you get the weapon itself or it's a roulette that determines an item you get from a listing of them. In this game, however, what you actually are doing is you configure what weapons you want your ship to have access to. You have access to two main weapons, and then those weapons can add modifiers equipped to them to do things like increase the damage they do, determine if they may home in or something, or if there's like less time for a specific weapon to charge up for homing damage, or just a number of things, splash damage, stuff like that, or disruption even. So when you do that and you ride over a weapon icon, you get access to both weapons and you just choose which one you want to unleash. Like my main build ended up just always being like a forward rocket and a back mine, because I wanted the ability to attack people in front of me and also people behind me if I needed to like just kind of maintain my lead.
Yeah, I used the rocket and the tether so that after I slam into the walls a whole bunch of time and destroy my shields, I can just suck the shield off of someone else.
Ooh, that's a good choice, actually. Yeah, like, and that's another thing that's awesome, too. Is like, there's a number of viable options, too. It's not like I chose the rocket and the mine because everything else just looked clearly like trash. It was literally like, hey, this is a vibe. This is my call right now. But if I want to change it up a bit, I can't. The options are there for
me. Yeah, and you could save and customize loadouts, which is awesome.
Mm-hmm. So you can have a variety of ships that you want to have on hand. If you come across a track where you can't seem to get in the lead often enough, then now might be the time to not have the mine loadout anymore and go with something like either the tether, like you suggest, in the event that you can't just maintain health for a long period of time. Or there's that one that I liked also where it's like an electrical pulse that just shoots ahead of you and hits everybody in front of you for a certain distance. It's not as powerful as the rocket is for one target, but it's good for just disrupting a bunch of different ships that are just like clustering up in front of you. So you might choose that just because this track is more viable. There's also performance modifications that you can equip with your ship, and they determine like how fast you, like basically the general stats, like, you know, anti-gravity stat or your acceleration stat, your top speed, blah, blah, blah. You know, the yakety smacky. But you can modify your ship to account for those things. You usually can equip one performance modifier and then two weapons on a ship, along with their mods. Now, unfortunately, the one thing about this game is that you don't just get those things from the start. You have to unlock all those things, and they are unlocked by way of spending credits, credits of which are won by completing races. You complete races by going into the campaign mode, and I think you even earn credits just by doing free races if you just want to just randomly drive your car in circles. But I think ultimately, at least early on, it makes more sense to do the career because that's where you get the majority of your stuff. And the way career works is that after you go through the training, which admittedly is not a lot to learn about the game, but it's still worth doing because, again, it's teaching you and you're still getting, you know, credit points for doing it, is that it then unlocks doing various Grand Prix. You can do basically, like, it starts out simple enough, but it is like you choose from a different campaign. say, for example, like a career company, like, I don't know the name. There's all this fake ass futuristic company name. So let's go with like freaking Mattel. I want to join Team Mattel. And then once you join them, they give you a series of things like stages you can do. But whereas the normal rule was always get first place, depending on the team you choose, they also give you a team goal too, such as, blow up as many cars as you can on the race, or collide with as many cars as you can, or always get first place. Like, just things like that.
Beat another company. Like, it doesn't matter how you do, as long as you beat them. That's the one I picked.
Yes. And that's actually a good one. Unless, of course, the other team's always in second place. It's like, well, fuck! But I like that they give you those bits of variation. And, of course, if you succeed at those things, you get bonus goal points and all, because you do what the team wanted you to friggin' do. Which then allows you to unlock more stuff. And over time, you'll unlock more courses, you'll unlock more car parts, customization tweaks in the form of like skins and all that. But it will take you time. However, in the event that you don't feel like you want to do the campaign, they also give you quite a few different modes that you can do too. Just general race modes. One in particular that because they have the general ones like elimination, where the last guy at a certain point in the race gets wiped out.
No.
They had, there's time trials and stuff. But there's one I thought was pretty cool. It's like in the eye of the storm, basically, where there's a storm raging on the track, and you have to kind of, your ship has to be placed within it. Like, it's not a really, I mean, you're trying to win too, but it's not necessarily about, winning and losing. It's about not being dragged out of the eye of the storm, because it'll destroy your ship.
That's so pretty cool.
It is. And when you think about it, I can't think of any other racing games that did that. Like, there are racing games that have done things like, the last man standing or something like that, but never here is the, I mean, the closest might have been like Motorstorm or something, but that was just obstacles to fuck around with the race. This is flat out saying stay within this circle that is constantly moving throughout the course. Like, it's kind of cool. I like that. But with this, with all that said and done, it is at its core a racing game. And the question becomes, how is the racing? And the answer is, it's fucking great. Like, it took a while for me to start busting out some first place wins, but when you get them, they feel good. There's different CC types, kind of like how Mario Kart has like 100, whatever, 150 CC, blah, blah, blah. This one does like 3,000, 2,000, 1,000, and Elite. And each one basically resolves around like challenges. Like, it becomes harder to beat the racers. But also, I think there's a bit of speed tweaking too. Like, the races do get a little bit faster. But even at the lowest tier, it's pretty fucking fast. Like, yeah, you do get a genuine sense of speed. And to couple with that, they even have the balls to slap in their the tilt on the ship to go faster. So, like, if you're going downhill, they actually tell you to tilt the stick forward so you can lean into the tip. Like, oh, I'm thinking about that. I'm trying not to blow my fucking ship up. I don't care about tipping my ship forward. I want to live, baby. So they give you a lot to work with in this game. It is a quality product. And the fact that I only heard of it when Joe was like, you want to play this game? Kind of shocks me, because I feel like there's an audience for this, because I know I'm partly the audience who liked, well, I wasn't all about the Wipeout aesthetic, but I thought the gameplay was solid.
Yeah, I like games that. My biggest concern with the game is whether or not that audience is going to be there. I wanted to try out the online multiplayer. I tried it twice. The first time I played, there were only two games going, and they were both in spectator mode, so I could just sit and watch for a while, and I didn't really have much time, so I just backed out and did some campaign instead. And then earlier today, I tried again, and there was nothing, and I tried at like 4 in the afternoon.
When did it come out again, though? Is it like it recently
March dropped, 9th right? On Xbox. Oh. Yeah.
Last week.
I thought you were about to say, yeah, it came out today. Like, well, there you go. But if it was last week, yeah, the way this audio system moves, hard to say. But we can at least say, on the purpose of this show, you all should buy it, because then maybe we'll have people to play online with. How about that? Because the game is good, and you will still have fun with it playing it by yourself.
Or it playing is with smooth. Like, visually, it is silky smooth, buttery smooth. I loved it. It was so pretty to look at.
I did feel that was like there was no like stuttering, no slowdown. It played to the point where like if I crashed or something, I fucked up. It wasn't the game stuttering that caused it. It's legit. This is a legit game, and I think it's worth some cash. Like, is there any other game? I mean, you're the Xbox guy. Are there any other games on the Xbox you say that compete with this as far as like the speed element goes and the racing?
I don't.
Spread
I,
out.
Yeah, read out, but I don't know if they're as destructive as this one. But this is a fast, smooth, gorgeous looking game. I do wish it were easier to destroy opponents. It seems like some races I would hit someone with four or five rockets and they'd still be going.
Mm-hmm. So I would hammer on some guys, but at that point it's just a matter of like, okay, guess what? I'm just going to slam into you. Yeah, like every race, I got that achievement pretty freaking quickly for like smashing into every car on one race.
Of course, fuck you.
I'm tired of this. But I feel like at the same time, like there were some laps where I was picking up weapon pickups back to back to back to back and was like hitting the same dude. Like, you're going to die. And he eventually and he didn't go damn.
He doesn't. No, he just doesn't.
Oh, this guy did. I was wrecking him. I was relentless. Wasn't giving him a chance to pick up shield icons. Like, you ain't got time for that. You got to die, bro. So if you're relentless, you can get him. But it's like, but Joe is right. Like, if you're not relentless on a guy or he isn't being attacked by other people on the track while you're trying to take him out, they do get some staying power. But on the positive, that also means you also get some staying power, because while I have been blown up before, when you see that icon, when you see the blur effect on your screen because you're getting machine gunned in the back and you can't get out of the guy's sight, you're thankful for the fact that the game doesn't do that three shots, you're dead junk, because true, it would be annoying. So there's a balance.
Well, $39.99 on this one. What are your thoughts?
Green. Buy it today and then play online so Joe's not alone with it.
I can agree on a buy it, although I do wish it were a bit cheaper. I think the price is going to hold a lot of people from getting the game and keep its audience kind of low. I kind of wish they would have went with a lower price to be more inviting to casual gamers, but we'll see if the audience grows, and it is absolutely worth picking up if you have the money.
Mm-hmm. Right now, I think it's like $31 instead of $40.
I don't know how long the sale is, so I never talk about sales.
Oh.
Yeah, the sale could end tomorrow for all I know. Anyway, next game to talk about is called Bob Help Them. Developed and published by No Gravity Games, released March 11th on the Switch for $7.99. Bob Help Them is a timer-based game where your goal is to help all NPCs gathering resources, cooking food, fishing, and chopping wood before the timer ends. Enjoy the calming countryside while supporting craftsmen with their daily chores. Tim, tell us about your time with Bob Help Them.
Yeah, who likes doing chores, motherfuckers? Well, I guess if you're helping craftsmen, you're also supporting local business, so that's good too. Yeah, so this is a kind of time juggling resource collection type game, which is something I thought that I might be interested in after playing. Well, I guess Wilmot's Warehouse, like last year, I got around to it, but then also playing Spiritfarer, where I'm kind of spent a lot of time jumping around on the ship, not with a time limit per se, but just, you know, toiling away, using a loom, using cutting wood and smelting shit. So I was like, okay, I like to do this stuff. Apparently, maybe I'll like a game that is all about that shit. And I do like a game that is all about that shit. So your dude Bob gets dropped into an area, and he'll kind of pan around to show you what people are standing around and what they want. Bob's arms are almost perpetually stuck above his head as he runs around, and he can only lower them if he is doing something that is not carrying them or standing still, or carrying something or standing still. Otherwise, arms straight above his head. So it starts out, it's like, okay, there's some people here. There's a dude over here that wants some apples, dude over here that wants some oranges. The trees, the apple trees will kind of have a timer on them and at the rate at which they grow apples. So it's not like you have to pick like one apple at a time. You just have to wait for it to grow, say, I don't know, 8 apples, and then grab 8 apples and then bring them over to the person who wants 8 apples, and then you throw them at him. Or if it's a person that wants 6 apples, you throw 6 apples at him, and then you throw those other 2 apples on the ground like a savage, because you don't need them anymore. So that's like the most basic, like, oh, go get this thing, bring this thing to other person. But then you start getting like, well, this person wants an apple pie, so you have to throw apples onto a fire to create pie. I was led to believe that making pies was a lot more difficult than that, and now I know better. So I'll be making pies this summer just by throwing apples and fruit onto my barbecue. simple enough. So yeah, that's like you. Then you have to collect the resource, take it to something else, throw it into the fire, and then it cooks, and then out comes an apple pie. Or, you know, you might collect eggs and then throw those into the fire, and then you have fried eggs. Or maybe someone just wants eggs and in their uncooked state. You will have to like chop wood, and sometimes you have to actually, you know, plane the wood to chop it down into boards first, take it to another machine. You will have to mine stone and then or, you know, metals, and then pound them down before you give them to people, because people just will not do work. So the whole thing, and there's many other jobs. I won't be exhaustive with this list, but what it comes down to is you're dropped into this area with a time limit. So you have to make all these people happy in a few minutes. People or animals. I will mention that there is a dog that needs pets sometimes, and you must pet the dog an appropriate number of times. So there is dog
and required dog
petting confirmed. Yes. So you getting the level, you then have to kind of identify like, okay, where are the resources that I need to get to where, and kind of figure out the optimum path to get these things done. Because like I mentioned, it might take a moment for trees to grow fruit, as it does in real life. So it's like, okay, well, I'm going to go chop wood because that is dependent on me while, you know, the trees grow more fruit, or while the chickens lay more eggs or whatever. So then it's like, okay, well, I'm going to chop this wood and throw it at that guy. Then now I can go grab the apples, but I'm going to set those to cook and then go do something else, like go fishing while that's happening. So you have to juggle all these things going on and kind of keep track of like what you need, who needs them, where they need to go, how much of it they need, just so you're not like wasting your time chopping a bunch of wood that you don't need. And that's the game. It has a, you know, pretty clean, colorful look to it. So you can see what everybody needs nice and clearly, and bring it to them. And that is the action. You just go through a bunch of levels, and it makes your life more complicated as you go on. And, yeah.
Sounds easy enough. $8 for Bob Help Them. What do you say?
Yeah, I think that's cheap enough if you're looking for this kind of like a, what I would qualify as like a sort of a puzzle action puzzle type game. Yeah, it's fun. It's a fun little thing.
Sounds like a good palate cleanser game.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, just go in and help. Have Bob. You are not helping. You're helping Bob. I don't think anybody knows. Bob's getting all the fucking credit, which is disgusting. That's the one downside of the game. But yeah, just go in, play a couple levels, then move on. Yeah, it's cool. I liked it.
Cool. All right. Well, so that is it for you. We will let you get going so you can scurry on to bed and get to work in the morning.
Yeah, fuck daylight savings, man. It's the worst.
No, it's not.
Bad. Yes, it is. Oh my God, Purnell, what is wrong with you? Nobody likes daylight savings or Necco wafers.
Why I love Necco wafers during daylight savings time. It's the best.
Oh my God.
So I've always wanted an excuse to wake up earlier.
Nothing like Necco wafers to wake up early. My thing is more along the lines of once it starts, I don't want it to go away, because then you have that feeling of it coming back and you're like, fuck, I lost an hour. But if they do it,
I just want it to stop.
I want them to like, I want it to stay like it is now and then that's never fine. Go back.
That's I'm fine, yes, with that.
Agreed.
I just want the time to stop changing. Apparently that I was reading about this today because, you know, I'm angry about it. And that is, it seems like there is a movement in the direction of making daylight savings time permanent. Not just, you know, keeping standard time, but keeping daylight savings time permanent. So I hope that will happen. Apparently states can on their own not do daylight savings time, but if they want to stay on daylight savings time, it requires federal approval.
The thing that bugs me about it the whole way through is that back in the day, the claim was that, well, it's probably not even a claim, it's probably true. Like, it was designed for the purpose of farmers, like, so they can like keep up with the status of like the weather and all for crops. But we live in an age where you could just, I don't fucking know, shift your own personal time for that purpose. Like, hey, yes. November, you start waking up at 6 instead of 7. I don't fucking know. Why just shift
wake up with the sun? That's yeah. It. That there you go.
Just adjust your own clock.
Yeah.
Like, now I get up at 6 instead of 7. Why shift everything?
It doesn't save power. It doesn't save. It's the same number of daylight hours. It's the same shit. It's stupid. And you know what? You know who doesn't give a shit about daylight savings time?
Cole knows, because the answer is children.
Yeah.
They don't fucking know what time is. They just keep on rolling with whatever. You know, it's just like, yeah.
Mommy, daddy, I want to them up.
It has been an absolute nightmare to get people up and moving for Google Classroom meets.
Yep.
Yep. When their circadian clock tells them they should still be in bed.
Yeah. Same here.
Good shit.
Hitting that snooze button hard. All right, yeah. Fuck daylight savings time and Necco wafers. Don't let him say anything good about Necco wafers after I leave. I'll be back.
Oh, when he's gone. Oh,
like you look in the mirror three and say Necco wafers five times.
Tim will appear behind you.
Yeah. All right, good night.
Oh, my God. All right, we got to move on. Next game to talk about is called Mighty Fight Federation, developed by Comey Games, published by Forthright Entertainment, released February 25th on PS4, PS5, and PC for $29.99. Slam opponents into walls, launch them into the air, and follow up with fast, high-flying attacks in this brand-new arena fighter. Choose from 13 different characters with unique play styles, face off in head-to-head matches, team up with other fighters, or embrace the chaos of four-player free-for-all. Chris, tell us about your time with Mighty Fight Federation.
Okay, so Mighty Fight Federation. Well, I was instructed to say at the beginning of the review or sometime that I actually know one of the people who made this game. But I think we just met at MAGFest or something and we're Facebook friends, so I don't think that's going to really color my opinion.
It's Julian, right?
Huh?
Julian, right?
Julian, yes.
Yeah,
yes.
He was on the show with Brentalfloss for Use Your Words.
Because they did use your words. Yeah, exactly.
He's a biased reviewer. We're screwed.
Buy it.
Well, it's also a very good game, so it's going to seem like I'm biased, I guess.
We're crooked. We're crooked as fuck on this show.
Well, I'm a rhombus. I don't know about you guys.
I will say in my defense, the game was offered to me first, and then I was like, oh yeah, I know that guy. And so, you know. Anyways, there was no prior knowledge.
Yeah.
Whatever. Who cares? Come after us, Gamergate. We don't care.
Speak for yourself. I'm the one that'd be in trouble.
Touché. <Is it true? laughs>
You're the only one they'd come after.
I didn't even see
it. Cole, what's your problem?
I'll be the one in trouble.
Okay, so Mighty Fight Federation. So this is a... Well, I guess I hesitate to call it a one-on-one fighter because, you know, you can have up to four people, but it is a fighting game of individuals, you know, beating each other up for wins. You know the type, you know, your Street Fighters and whatnot. This one is fashioned mostly seemingly after the Power Stone series. That's maybe that one's obscure. I don't know, but it's... It's to where your fighters have total 3D free range to move around the stage, and sometimes even utilize the stage and, like, you know, battle damage or, like, getting extra damage from, like, certain things. And the thing that really kind of draws this one in is the hype, as was an actual function of the game. So your guys can fight. You use it's a little bit in that kind of Smash Bros. Tradition of, like, the same moves work for every fighter. So every fighter has a standard attack, and if you use the standard attack like three times in a row, it's a combo. Then there's a different attack. It's not always a stronger attack. Sometimes it's a long range attack. A couple of characters have long range capabilities. Sometimes it's a throw. In one instance, it's downing a power drink, an energy drink rather. And you know, it's different for every character. In fact, one duo of characters I'm definitely going to talk about, it switches between them in a kind of tag team way. So lots of variety between these different characters. And you can also do alternate attacks, which are usually maybe directional or just have some other gimmick to them by holding, like, on a controller anyway, you would hold the like a shoulder button and then push the same buttons and get a different result. As you attack and as you build up power and, you know, knock the other enemy out, you gain... You gain hype, which fills up these two, like, this split status bar. So these two status bars. And when one of those little modules is full enough, you can use it to kind of get out of a situation and knock back your opponent if they're getting the upper hand. So like if you're getting like grabbed or pounded by one character, you use your hype button, and then that will kind of cause a small explosion, like a flash bomb or something that doesn't do much damage, but it gets them off your back for a second so you can run away, because there is no blocking in this game. You have avoiding attacks, and you know, a lot of attacks are avoidable, but you cannot just sit there and, you know, hold the block button or something and, you know, expect to get away with it. Also, characters have a once per battle, like, super move that they can do. It triggers differently for every character. Sometimes it's a grab, sometimes it's like they'll throw a projectile, and if the projectile hits, then it starts the attack. These are always, they like stop the action and are cinematic, and you know, they're unavoidable. Like if you get caught in it, just sit back and watch yourself get half of your life pounded away. But you know, you can do it too, so it's not exactly a bad thing. So where this game really, that's the mechanics of the game, of course. And every character I'm gonna recommend, like if you pick this game up, you know, pick your favorite character and go into training mode and learn everything that character can do. You will have a much better time than if you just try to jump in there and expect everybody to control like Ryu or something, you know, because everyone is so different. The tutorials are based around, what's his name? The werewolf character who is named Heckbane, which he's
beautiful
the one that...
name.
Yeah, he's the one that Swole for Souls is what his little tank top says. He's
Swole
a gym.
For soul. I'm soul.
Yeah, he's like a gym rat who's also kind of like a werewolf minotaur. Anyway, he's like a total bro. So it's like, and you get to like learn how to use him in the tutorial. But yeah, no, the characters are easily the best part of this game. There are so many. Well, interestingly, though, there are like inconsistencies that in that some characters are totally serious. There's nothing funny about them. And then there's Strike Fist, who, you know, looks like, you know, Guile with a haircut and like a big old like chest tattoo. But he's the Canadian prime minister who hits the streets and like swears to clean up the streets, right?
Oh my God.
Of course, Julian is Canadian, and I think the whole developer is like Canadian, so this is a great joke there. But so the entire game is voice acted, which is impressive for an indie game like this. And in his every character has a cinematic intro, and in the intro, when it like it's going about his story about how he like cleans up the streets and stuff, and like tragedy strikes. He has no more streets to clean. He's like, I need more streets. I laughed aloud and like, holy geez. Yeah, there's like, and then, you know, there's different characters that kind of play on certain tropes. And like I said, some characters are very serious, like Crystal, who is a like mutant creature, who, you know, used to be a regular lady, and then she's trying to like find the cure for her condition, but her condition also makes her a badass fighter. And it's like nothing about her is funny. It's just she's a cool character. That's all it is. But then they got Killbot 9000, who is like totally like a play on Fulgore from Killer Instinct. And like all of his lines are just like, you know, about murdering people and stuff, but he does it in like that monotone robot voice and stuff. And
oh God,
he's actually got some pretty funny lines. And then there's like Stingray, who's like the big giant oaf of a, like, I don't know, zombie army dude. Like he's not really a zombie, but he looks like one. His color palette is green, and he's got like these big giant shoulder pads, and one of them just has like all these grenades and stuff. And the other one like clearly has like a pocket protector with some Sharpies in it. And like his whole story is that he's trying to, you know, the army betrayed him or something like that and left him to die. And they kidnapped his dear Maria, Maria being his pet turtle, you know, things like that. So then this game, and I think this is a little later because they've got notes in here about the patch that adds in the newest character, but they have guest stars in this game. And the newest one is actually Yuka and Laylee from Yooka-Laylee. so you can now play as them.
They also have Toe Jam and Earl in the game.
Yeah, that was what I was, and I forgot about that. Like, I knew about that, and then I loaded up the game, and I was like, oh yeah, it's friggin' Toe Jam and Earl, two of my favorite characters in video games.
Is that who you used?
Yeah, well, here's the thing. they control so differently because they're a tag team. They're that tag team that I mentioned earlier, that it really is, they're very different. So you kind of really have to learn them. And I haven't learned how to be very effective with them yet, but I do kind of get them. Like, you switch for Toe Jam if you want to get like combos and stuff, but you switch to Earl if you want like a single, like really hard punch or something. And they each have like different specials and stuff. And, yeah, they're very well realized in this game, and they do feature, I think, the same voice actors as back in the Groove, so that's really cool. And oh yeah, there's also a I can't believe this is, I'm burying the lead here for real, but there's Tombstone, who is a skeletal keytar player slash Grim Reaper, who is a skeleton from Australia.
My God.
He looks like, he also like very effectively looks like a Guitar Hero like character, which more so than anybody else in the game, which I think is actually pretty neat. And I could go on about the characters all day, but I'm not gonna. So yeah, the characters are all there. They're very fun to play and learn and stuff like that. And again, I really like the comedy. And the way that a single player campaign works is that you fight like some one-on-one fights, and then every I want to say like three fights or so, you get into a group fight with, you know, three other characters. And eventually, though, they they put you in a fight with three copies of your character. And that, to me, like, it's an interesting concept. But since every character has like a little introductory walk on kind of thing, like in Street Fighter 4 or whatever, I guess a lot of modern fighters kind of have it now.
Yeah.
You watch the same walk on, like there's three different phrases that a character might say, but there's also four characters on screen. So you're guaranteed one of those characters is going to repeat something. And so I'm just kind of like, that's cool, but a little thrown together, but whatever. And yeah, like then you do that, and then, you know, you of course have to fight your way up to, you know, there's occasionally like a certain pairing of two characters will trigger a little story scene. So you kind of learn a little bit more about them, but you know, it's not a heavy story. It's and usually it's comedy anyway. But you know, two characters will actually talk to each other and have special dialogue, and then eventually you make your way to the final boss, and then of course the secret final boss.
Ooh, don't give away spoilers.
I'm not gonna. I'm just saying there's kind of more than just the characters that are on
more
the screen.
More than meets the eye. Transformers. What?
Oh yeah. Speaking of that, the soundtrack to this game is, you know, I don't want to prejudge where they put all their budget, because the graphics are amazing too, but that, holy shit, their soundtrack is incredible, and they've got like eight different composers on it, including Vince DiCola, who of course is the composer from the Transformers movie,
who we had on the show before, which was awesome.
Yeah, he's on there, and you can tell when he's on there too. They also got Manami Matsumai, who is the original composer of Mega Man. Yeah. So she's on there too.
That reminds me of a game I want to try to review. Shit. Thanks for that recollection. She's work now.
Oh, yeah. So anyways,
that's what we
need
for now. More workload.
But anyways, ultimately, like, you know, I'm heaping all this praise upon it. There is one little, like, complaint that I do kind of have about it, and it's not even a big deal. It's just like, this game is put together very professionally. Like, I was actually kind of impressed that it's an indie game. You know, it actually plays like a full, you know, a full on retail game. And the only thing that kind of takes me out of it is that the voice acting, while well performed, is absolutely seems like it's a product of COVID. And I was afraid that this would start happening. The character voices are super inconsistent. One person sounds like they're shouting into a $10 microphone from across the room. One person is just right up on the microphone like this. Some people actually really sound like, you know, they're in a voice, like a professional booth, and like getting, you know, using real microphones and stuff. So I'm hoping that this game will sell well enough that they can take all those voice actors and put them in a real studio and like have all of them actually re-record their lines. Cause that's like the only thing separating this from being like a $60 game. So
well, as I had it stands at $30. What do you think about it?
Yes, totally worth it. You can, it's got a cross-platform play. So if you got any friends that have this, then you can play with them. It's up to 4 players. It's got online. And it's just really fun to play even by yourself. As like I said, some of the characters a little cheaper than others, but you know, that's any fighting game for you.
Yeah.
I will say I have actually gotten the achievement for winning a round without taking any damage whatsoever.
Oh, look at you.
It's because I found a character that was that I could cheese.
Oh, God.
That's also how I beat the game.
All right,
it's a buy it for sure.
Cool. Well, moving on. Next game to talk about is Dead Age 2, developed by Silent Dreams, published by Head Up, released March 12th out of Steam Early Access for $17.99. So this is full release. Dead Age 2 is a unique combination of survival management, roguelike events, turn-based combat, classic role-playing game with tons of quests, and a story in which your decisions directly affect plot progression. Cole, tell us about your time with Dead Age 2.
They went the roguelike route, and you're going to die, and none of your choices are going to matter because you're dead, and you have to start all over again.
Yay!
So let's go ahead and clear that one, because there are a lot of fucking people who really don't like roguelikes, and if you were hoping to pick up Dead Age 2, first off, you done goofed, because it was only like $10, and now it's $17. And second off, it's got roguelike elements, so take that into effect. Dead Age 2 kind of reminds me of what the original State of Decay was, in that you have to build up your base, gather resources, improve your base. There's ammo scarcity, just general scarcity of fucking everything, because it's 10 years after this apocalypse has started. You create your character, and your character is on a mission to go and meet their friend, and shit ensues because this is a full-fledged, gory, gritty-ass type of apocalypse. There is no joy to be had in Dead Age 2. So if you're looking for, like, comedic relief, you're not getting it. Not from the story. Maybe a little from the graphics. I was hoping to see a bit more improvement in the graphics between early access and full release. I can't help but feel like a lot of the characters are asset flips. They just look very generic, very bland. They don't move well. The animations are a little chunky. If you can ignore the way the game looks, the play is actually really fucking cool. When you encounter combat, it is turn-based combat with a point-and-click scheme at the bottom. So basically, like, you choose your weapon that you're going to attack with and which attack you're going to carry out. You have to take into consideration which row your character is in. I cannot tell you how many times I fucked up because I was in the back row with a knife. That's a good way to get dead. And then again, dead is dead, dead. So
E-E-D dead.
H2. So don't stand in the back row with a knife. Don't stand in the front row with a rifle. There's some things to take into consideration. You definitely have to play it a little more strategically. I did like that aspect of it. And I found myself spending an insane amount of time playing it like, oh, I'll just explore one more area.
No.
And that's never a good idea. Like, once you've got enough shit, go home. Okay? Don't just be like, I wonder what the water bottle on the map is. Because it's death. It's always death. Doesn't matter if it looks like water. It's definitely death. And you're going to then have to start all over. And at that point, you're like, well, I got to start all over now. I can't just not play more. And before you know it, you're sucked in and you've lost 40 hours and about 17 characters. I don't want to talk about it. Really, really enjoyed the gameplay. It does. It is the kind of gameplay, though, that appeals to a niche. You're not literally controlling your character. I mentioned State of Decay earlier. Don't get any kind of ideas that you're, like, taking your character out for a stroll and shooting these zombies, because that's not how it plays. It is definitely more of a point-and-click type of gameplay, where you are making choices, and dialogue boxes will come up and say, you know, oh, do you want to try to pick this lock? And then it'll tell you which of your characters has the greatest chance of succeeding, or, you know, it'll say, do you want to pick a fight with this faction, or do you want to bribe them, or whatever? So you have that more point-and-click strategy gameplay, as opposed to actual, like, 3D going into battle kind of play. I like that kind of gameplay, though. I think that's one of the reasons that I found myself just kind of getting lost in the game and being like, oh, I spent 10 hours on Dead Age today. Because you're just clicking and not always thinking about it. And then you're like, also, that's how you kind of get dead, because you're not paying real good attention to your numbers.
Proud of you.
And then you're like, well, now I got to start over.
Proud of you.
I'm wonderful at this shit. I play them all the time. You'd think I'd just like be able to close my eyes and roll through it. I will say the scarcity cranks up the difficulty. I was playing on casual, and I'm experienced at these kinds of games. This is almost what I play in my solo gameplay time exclusively. And I was still getting my world rocked. One of the most difficult things is that it doesn't feel like there's enough resources gathered from entering combat to justify exploring and entering combat. So you find yourself constantly trying to avoid any kind of combat situation, particularly because you just don't have enough ammunition, you don't have enough weapons for everybody, and I would like to see, at least on easier difficulties, I understand there's tryhards who are totally cool with exploring 3/10 of the map and never seeing a drop of ammunition. I'm not, and I'd like some ammo, please.
Let me shoot things.
Tryhard.
Yeah. Like, the knife play is all well and good until you realize that you're constantly putting everybody in harm's way by putting them in the front row, and then you're running out of med kits because there's just not enough of anything. So it would be nice if, for the sake of the story, casual difficulty and maybe even normal had just slightly more resources to go around. Like, if I get into a fight with 7 zombies, well, 2 rows, 6. Let's say I got into a fight with 5 zombies and a wolf, because there's wolves. I don't want to talk about it. I don't want to spoil anything. but let's say you're in a fight with 5 zombies and a wolf. I should walk away with just a smidge more than a piece of meat. At least on casual. So that's really my only major complaint. There's definitely still room for balancing. There are heavy RPG elements. You need to upgrade your characters. You get shit tons of skill points. They level up. And I would like to see them have a little more of a way to point out. Like, at one point, I went into my settings and realized that my characters had like 40 skill points that I had not assigned, because I didn't know I had been unlocking them. So it would be nice if there were just some more quality of life things to point out. Oh, hey, dumbass, you have skill points. And, oh, hey, dumbass, you're bad. Here's some more ammo.
Big shout out to Chris for dropping 300 biddies. I love just randomly hearing, dropping biddies. I love it. It's funnier now that I don't have to control it, because I can't control it. And it just happens.
I could see you on the camera, like, losing your shit. And that's all I could assume was happening, was the bit dropping. What's going on?
Dropping bits! So thank you, Chris. Thank you very, very much for the biddies. Not you, Chris. Other Chris.
Yeah, I know.
Too many Chris's. We have
a lot of Chris's.
A lot of Chris's too, on too the many. Show. A lot of people. Oh, Dead Age, $18. What do you think?
I do think that it's a buy it. If you enjoy this kind of game. That's the problem, though, right? Like, it's kind of niche, and I could see more people falling into the try it category for it. But if you already know that you enjoy strategy games, you already know you like turn-based gameplay, like, it kind of wears its genre and gameplay mechanics and everything on its sleeve. You can tell by looking at it if it's something you're gonna jump on. Yeah. So I think for the price and the gameplay that's there, I'm good with a buy it.
Cool. Yeah. All right. Next up is Cerulean Ultimate, developed and published by Thylacine Studios, released March 12th on Steam Early Access for $19.99. Cerulean Ultimate is monster catching, dungeon crawling RPG with a ridiculous amount of depth. Summon over 1,000 different creatures and travel through randomly generated dungeons to acquire resources, new creatures, and loot. Brunel, tell us about your time with Cerulean Ultimate.
You kind of just did. This game is, woof, my God. So, like a few weeks ago, or maybe months ago at this point, I reviewed Monster Sanctuary, which was like monster collecting and battling.
What? Pancakes!
And my thought then was like, wow, this is a pretty deep monster battler as far as the customization options go and what you could do and the monsters you find. Well, fuck that shit, because here's the real skinny. This is probably the most, holy crap, there's a lot of content monster collecting battling game I have ever seen in my life. There's a lot here. So the idea in general is that at the beginning of the game, you choose a class for your character that you're playing as. And there was like 15 and 20.
Drop it, bitch!
The way they work is that they pretty much provide unique play styles that will likely determine how you play until you change classes. For example, there's one class I remember that does better when they have less monsters in their party. So if you have like one or two monsters instead of the full roster of six, those two monsters will be badasses.
You know what else is badass? Chris is badass because she dropped another 1,000 biddies. Holy shit. Thank you so, so much. I cannot thank you enough for the biddies.
Again, wasn't me.
You should try. You can try. Deck beggar again. Do it. Do it. Do it. Do it.
Anyway, Cerulean, keep telling us.
So if I keep talking, will she keep dropping biddies?
I don't know.
Let's see then. Well, so furthermore, and the character I chose ended up being something along the lines of like spell augmentations for my characters. Like everybody gets like a weird buff. So after that, then you get like a starting monster that each of those guys comes with two. Now, of all the 1,000 monsters or whatever they claim are in the game, every one of them has a unique perk that they come with just for existing. Like, my favorite one was actually that I've come across so far. And it's kind of sad that I feel like this is only really my favorite because there's so damn many that I couldn't discern a favorite beyond this. Is this character that I had cast Magic Missile with any other character cast a spell. Any character casts a spell. So it's like any guy could a dumb spell for healing, Magic Missile. Augment stat buff, Magic Missile. It was freaking cheap. So you got that. So every character has that. And then in addition to that, they all have their own general like innate element, which allows you to equip specific spell orbs to them based on their element. Spell orbs are things you have to create using currency in the game. And you acquire the currency through dungeon crawling. There are items you can buy that are like generic equipment, things like swords and shields or whatever, which can further boost and augment stats on the character's, you know, base. And then you can buff those items up so that they do more and better. And it just keeps going. You can fuse them into new monsters, but when you fuse them, they actually get a little bit of a tweak to them. Like they look different. They get like color palette options you can choose from. And there's just so much that goes into all of it. And the way you get monsters, this isn't like how Pokemon works. You have to throw a ball at them or something. When you're in dungeons and you fight them, typically, if you come across a monster and beat the snot out of it enough times, you'll just unlock it at the Crucible back at the main hub, and you can just put it in your party if you want.
Oh, that's
and just
good. Carry it around.
Yeah, like, the grind is in... There's enough grinding in the game that they don't need you to freaking throw balls at jerks and hope you luck out on catching it. I'm glad they didn't do that. But you will be grinding a lot, and you will be doing it because you'll be trying to collect monsters, level up your monsters, get new spell orbs for your monsters, get new equipment for your monsters, fuse your monsters, and there's always a new monster. And the funny thing about it, whenever you think you might have a team that's too broken, too glitched out, the game will still fuck you up later, because that's the weird thing about everybody having crazy abilities and like buffs that seem broken. That means that there's always a more broken ability than yours. It's just you haven't come across it yet. And then when you think that was too broken and you try to get into your party with that good synergy, there's something better. Because that's the other part of it, too. It's not just one or two unique abilities that are awesome. It's also just general team synergy that factors in, too. Because all these things combined come together to form really awesome team building, monster building, management. And the funny thing is, like you might mention, you might notice I didn't bring up much about the dungeon crawling itself. And that's because, to be perfectly honest, the dungeon crawling is just a vessel to get battles in. Like, when you do dungeons, they're like the occasional like dungeon trap and stuff like that, and you come across stuff you can smash up to get resources to take back to town or treasure chest to get items. But for the most part, the vibe I get from dungeon crawling is like, hey, every floor you go to in a dungeon, there's a general goal you have to fulfill in order to proceed to the next level. So you're seeking that out on the floor while fighting monsters and finding items. And sometimes there's like floor events, like you might find a place that allows you to bring something that you find on the floor to it to get cool items or loot. Might be a really particular special monster you can fight there to get extra bonus treasure or stuff like that. So you'll be finding stuff to do. Typical roguelike structure for dungeon crawling. But it's all about those damn monster battles. 6v6 battles up to. And they get freaking crazy. Sometimes I had trouble keeping up with the hell they were even doing. Because they would just trigger each other's abilities. That was a boss I fought early in the game who rocked my damn world because he had an ability called Ravenous, which I'd never seen, where every time any enemy on his team kills one of yours, he gets buffs across all of his stats. And it happened quite a few times to the point where he was just like stomping us. I was like, this is freaking insane. I gotta come over to break this damn strategy. And of course you do, because that just means you gotta kill his guys before any of your guys go down so that Ravenous doesn't kick in. But still, it was freaking dirty. And the best thing that I came across, I realized too, that helps is that, so you might be saying, so what is the variety like as far as skills and spells go? And what I'm going to tell you is, there's a fuck ton of those. There's a lot. How do I know that? Well, it's not so much just about finding monsters to fight and what skills they did, but the first spell book I created in the game was one called Elemental Tome. And what Elemental Tome does is when you use it, it gives every monster in your party one random spell from the spell lexicon. And I'm hard-pressed to think of times where I came across duplicates. Like, there's always something freaking new. Always something. There are a lot of spells in this game.
And this is still in early access. Like, they're planning to add more to the game.
Like, I wonder if they're actually going to do, like, a multiplayer at some point. Though, even if they did, I don't know how that would work. Because, like, when you think about something like, say, Pokemon, I know people who play Pokemon to fucking death. I mean, they've beaten the game years ago. I'm talking about Sword and Shield at this point. They've beaten it like back when it first came out, that week of it. And now they just ride their bike in circles to get a shiny of every Pokemon in the game. That's what they're doing with that game, to make the max it out. And I'm sitting there thinking, like, there's a reason why that might work, but something like Cyrillum might over, like, maybe that'll be too much for them, or maybe that's what they need. Like, because the monster battling in Cyrillum is so freaking open-ended that, I mean, I feel like every time someone thinks they've got the perfect team, someone else can come up with a better team. Like, there's no, like, top dog. And the options are so vast that you'll always have a new team to build. You're never going to feel like, I built every team I possibly could. No, it just means your imagination hasn't allowed you to come up with the next team. Because there's, like, 1,000 fucking monsters.
Yeah.
And they're all somewhat viable.
And they're adding more. That's the craziest part, is they are going to add more. So, yeah,
like, I would love to see, like, avid monster battlers play this game. And sadly, it's only a single-player game from what I can tell. But if they ever even so much as attempted to do a versus mode, I would love to see that. Because the permutations alone would make this, like, infinitely playable in a way that I would like to see people attempt to have, like, a competitive scene in.
Oh, maybe if they listen and they hear the feedback. I don't think there's any plans for multiplayer, but that could definitely change. As it stands, it's at $19.99. They say the price will not go up during early access, so it's just going to stay $20. Is this worth jumping in now, or should people wait on it? What do you think?
Literally the only negative I can possibly give this. Well, two. One, if you're a graphics hound, well, don't worry about it then, because it's a decent-looking game, but we're talking like Nintendo, Super Nintendo graphics, nothing absurd. And beyond that, the other one is, if you're not down for the grind in the long haul, then move forward, because this is hundreds of hours right here. And I'm not even exaggerating that shit. This is a lot of time you can get out of this game to really get down and dirty with it. But if you're okay with playing it until you're bored, or if you have thousands of fucking hours, at the end of the spectrum, really, and you like monster battling, this is a no questionable. You should buy this game. Like, I had one of the early Serial Limb games, and I bought it just thinking, yeah, I'll just kind of hang on to it, but I'll get to it. And I never did. And now that I'm playing this one, I'm like, shoot, I should be playing that game. This is quality.
The funniest part about this is when I first took the information off the Steam page, it said summon over 1,000 different creatures. It now says summon over 1,200 different creatures.
They already updated it.
They already added more to it. So this sounds like it's worth jumping in on.
Oh yeah, 100%. Like if you hit the criteria that I mentioned, then this is a no contest. But if you even so much as like Pokemon team building and battling, no fucking contest. You should buy this game.
Cool.
There's a lot going on there.
All right. Well, next game to talk about is called Pink Man Plus, developed by Green Dinosaur Games, published by Rattlake Games, released February 12th on Xbox One, Series X and S, PS4, PS5, and Switch for $4.99. Pink Man Plus is a fast-paced action platformer about a lost man with a pink skin and the ability to jetpack to new heights. He has the power to run fast, jump high, rebound off walls, and even create a jet for a short period of time. Run, jump, and jetpack through a minimalist and colorful but deadly environment called the Mind. Chris, you played Pink Man Plus. I played it too. It's N Plus. Fucking buy this game. I don't know what else to say.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I haven't played N Plus, so I guess I could maybe explain a little more.
Yeah, I guess so. Go ahead. Do your job.
I guess so. They handed us two codes, and that's all we say about it. Like, really, just testing Rattalaika at this point.
It's N Plus. Buy it. Fuck it. Go.
Yeah. Okay.
No, I really did love this game. I sat down to, like, see what it was about, and I just blew through it. I loved it.
It is one of those where it's so it is a challenge platformer, which means that it's like, you know, instead of the levels making any kind of real sense, it's just like they just throw a bunch of spikes and, you know, instant death traps all around and you're just supposed to navigate them. That's what I call a challenge platformer. I don't know if anybody's ever thought to put those two words together before, but I'm a professional reviewer, so it's my duty to inform the language. Anyways, yeah, so it is basically, yeah, where you are a little guy, you know, monochrome, actually kind of Atari looking, like a little bit like a 2600 look, but with, you know, actual 60 frames a second, like movement. And you just got this little like gauge over your head and you run and jump and wall jump a little bit. And, you know, there's another button you can hold down to very, very briefly get a bit of a jetpack boost. But the way that the game plays with it is pretty interesting because, like, for instance, there's this when you are jetpacking, you can hit a gas can icon in midair and that instantly refills your jetpack. And there's one level where the entire background is like jetpack fuel.
There's a couple like that. That's just,
yeah, a couple like that indeed. But that's just, it's absurd, but it's so interesting because it makes you kind of have to like, cause you have to like fly up and down multiple times in these places. So you kind of have to figure out your path so you don't run out of gas. Like, I don't know. I think that's actually pretty cool. And again, it doesn't have any bearing on the real world, but once you start playing it, like I said, you just kind of get into it. And I think the minimalist approach really helps it there. But yeah, there really isn't much to say about this game. I mean, even if you haven't played N Plus, you have played something like this before, I'm sure. And, you know, it's a cheap game, and it'll give you a good time. It's not too difficult, which is what I like. Everything kind of seems to have a logic to it. You will kind of have to die just to see where the hazards are. You know, you kind of have to jump into the dark.
Some trial and error.
Yeah, which to me is like a little unintuitive, but whatever.
There's 100 stages. You could deal with a few that are like that.
And if you are playing it on PS4, which is what I'm reviewing it on, you get trophies by completing levels, and you get your last one at level 45, and that's where you get your platinum. It's easy as that.
Yep.
So, yeah.
So, $5, what do you say?
It's kind of a fuck it, why not, but also I do like the quality of it, so I say go ahead and buy it.
Cool, I agree with you. As soon as I started playing this and I realized it was like N+ and N++, I'm like, yes, this is... Thank you, Rataleika, for bringing this to us. Thank you, Green Dinosaur Games, for making this. I am very happy with Pink Man Plus.
And thank you to Communism for bringing us the Pink Man.
Yeah.
According to Angerth.
My only real gripe that I had with the game is every time you die, the palette changes.
Yes.
And you can get some really ugly combinations of colors.
They tout that in the... In the sales screen too, is being like, I don't have it pulled up anymore, but 16 it's like
stunning color palettes.
You know, you could be stunned by a grenade too, like a flash grenade. Stunning doesn't mean necessarily, you know, attractive.
Oh no, Chris in chat is a blue hater. I love blue. That's my favorite color.
Blue hater?
She doesn't like blue.
Oh. I thought that was like some anti-Democrat type thing.
Oh my god. Anyway, next game to talk about is called Demonizer, developed and published by Iori Branford, released back in October on Steam for $11.99. The fantasy bullet battle to end monster girl genocide, turn hateful humans into lovable demons in this 90s arcade style shooter. Cole, tell us about Demonizer.
So this is a bullet hell shmup, if you will. There are a lot of different options in how you can play it. You can play it vertically, you can play it horizontally. There are a fuck ton of options in this game in general, which is impressive because it's like a 20 megabyte install. It's so tiny. And I went into the settings and I was like, I have played 3 gigabyte indies that had less options.
Steam page, minimum requirement storage, 16 meg available.
Yeah, it's so tiny. But the game actually packs a punch. Look, I'm going to be honest. When I saw that install, I was like, I don't have a lot of hope here.
Yeah.
And I say that as somebody who likes shmups, and I'm like, yeah! But I was really pleasantly surprised. There's a whole story surrounding monster girl genocide, and that'll get us demonetized if we weren't already. One of the primary characters becoming a succubus and warring against her sister, and it's weird, and it's pretty much an excuse to occasionally have some pixel boobs. And it's fine. That's not my favorite thing about this kind of game. I enjoy it for the actual shmup mechanic, as opposed to, well, anime monster titties. Girls. Yeah, I was just like, you know, Chris probably would have been over there like, it had anime boobs, and he would have been happy. And
Chris, do you feel attacked by that?
I wasn't listening.
That you would love anime boobs.
They're fine.
See, I wouldn't know. Would you love 90s pixelated anime boobs? You would. See, he didn't say no.
Ew, I hate them.
Ah, you're so full of shit. try to be more convincing next time.
Oh my god.
There's certain players that are gravitating toward that aesthetic, and I'm just not that player. But the overall gameplay I actually really enjoyed. As you destroy enemies, you get little buddies who fly around you and they help you take out the enemies, and that's all. And then you get more buddies. at the end of a level, I think there were 7 or 8. I don't remember exactly. At the end of the level, you get a bonus if you didn't lose any of your buddies along the way. I did really good with that until like level 4. And then at that point, I was just flying solo because I kept getting everybody killed.
Makes sense.
Because it's surprisingly difficult, but you know, that's the genre it is. In fact, despite the fact that I say it's surprisingly difficult, I think more so I should be saying it was surprisingly easier than I expected, because I did expect such a high difficulty. So I think it was a nice happy medium. Like, I thought it was going to be harder, but I managed to beat it, so it wasn't so bad after all. that says a lot on its own. But yeah, I had a good time with it. There were some really neat things. One of the things that stood out to me is that normally they're, when you're playing like a bullet hell or a shmup or whatever, the enemies will shoot and then they just kind of like stand there and wait for you to retaliate, right? But in Demonizer, the enemies with like the bow and arrows and stuff, they'll stand out to shoot and then they'll take cover and hide from you while they're reloading.
Nice.
You have to actually take that into consideration when you're blowing through the levels. You can't just be like, that fucker missed me and now I'm going to get him. You're like, no, I have to actually go find him. Because they will sneak back behind the trees and stuff. And I thought that was really creative. And again, that kind of shit in a 16 megabyte game. Who knew? Who knew it was possible?
Yeah, so $12 for 16 meg, what do you think?
At that point, you know, they were just sitting over there going, we could charge them just $1 a meg. And nobody would have been mad. I think the price suits it. It's fine. It's got a balanced difficulty system. I was really impressed with the level of options they gave you. And yeah, I think for $12, it's good. Buy it.
Cool.
Yeah.
All right, Dark Mika finally here because we were talking about boobs and I told her that and she wasn't here to hear about the boobs.
Yep. No 90s retro pixel art anime boobs for you.
Yeah. Aki's always late. Yep. And the wet pancakes. Right, George?
Wet pancakes!
That's right. Right, Purnell?
Fucking yeah! What?
One more game to talk about tonight. I have been waiting for this one. Final game to talk about tonight is called Tai Shogun, The Rise of Emperor, developed and published by LGS Productions, released March 12th on PS4 for $9.99. I didn't know how to cut down the description, so I'm just going to read the whole thing. Heian Jade's 12th century period, many internal tensions occur with the increasing power of the clans increasing alongside the imperial court, where mysterious supernatural phenomena occur. Over the years, two powerful clans have fought intense conflicts over power, where one of them, led by the legendary shogun, achieved great and important victories against the other enemies. However, regional leaders continued to have great power and influence, where they made a secret alliance with occult forces to defeat and assassinate the legendary shogun and takes his past from him as military chief. However, after his assassination, all military power was placed in the hands of his daughter. Genpei's war with Misako then begins with a mission to defeat all enemy demons and clans that conspire to assassinate the legendary Tokimasa.
Chris, long ass description.
What
you got? All that?
What is this?
What is this? I need to hang on.
I need a minute.
I turned down the audio volume so I could hear something else, and then I accidentally turned down the speaker volume, but then I kept the microphone volume where it was, and so I'm deafening myself by talking.
Nice. Because
I have to turn it up. Yeah. So that's one of those kind of descriptions where it's like, name one thing in this picture. Name one thing in this description. Don't worry about trying to retain any of that. Just don't worry about it. Forget it. Because what this is the new game from Gilson B. Pontes.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
No, really?
Yes. This is the new game from LGS Productions. Gilson B. Pontus is back.
He has returned.
In pog form.
He has returned. And actually, in researching this, which I actually do research stuff, I found out that he actually comes out with one of his games. You know, I said he's been releasing them every year. He actually releases them right around this time every year. So we can kind of actually say that, you know, we can kind of expect this to be like an annual event. So if you remember, the last game that I talked about from him was called Shadow the Ronin, The Revenge to the Samurai.
Yes.
And that game was a bunch of hot garbage. it was absolutely terrible, unplayable, pointless, and this game is pretty much the exact same game. he just kind of he changed one or two things, and we'll talk about that. And we're gonna give him a fair shake here, but yeah, as soon as I loaded it up and saw that I was a character riding a horse towards a portal leading to the stage, I was like, dear God, he just made the exact same game. He copied and pasted it. And that's what we're dealing with. So the character this time, instead of being a... He ripped off himself. He stole his own stolen assets.
Dang.
Well, yeah. We don't know if they're stolen assets. Paid for, though.
Most likely, you know, he's got to be some kind of, like, you know, auteur or something like that. He's just sitting around with money, and he's like, I'm just going to buy a bunch of assets and release a game, just say I don't know. And I will say that this time he didn't credit himself like 20 different times. I mean, he is the only credit in the game, but he shortened it to 4. But it's like art and music, directed and produced by, you know, he's getting more efficient. I mean, this is technically improvement, so we have to note it. So yeah, you're a character riding a horse, and I don't know how he did this. He somehow made the horse riding worse than the last game. Because the horse doesn't turn, the horse spins in place. So unless you are running at full speed, and by the way, you ride in the actual stages with a horse now. It's not just the intro stage or the intro, like, you know, riding through the city. Now you actually go into the stages with your horse. And if you're in a full gallop, then yes, if you kind of tilt the stick a little bit to the left, a little bit to the right, you can kind of go in those directions. But if you like actually crank the stick to the left or right, your horse just turns around. Like, you can literally with your horse run and then do a full 360 like before you fully stopped. It is ridiculous. Now, here's a great thing, and this is some of that high art that we have like come to expect from Gilson B. Pontes, producer and director of this game, if you didn't know. So your character has a sword, like, you know, all of his characters ever. And if you push the shoulder buttons while you're mounted on top of the horse, either the left or the right one, now you can actually swing your sword to the right or to the left, which is actually a mechanic that... that comes from Skyrim. That's how Skyrim works too. So of course, if you are coming towards an enemy, which the way these work is that you get into this huge, endless void of like a field or something with like trees and occasionally buildings, stuff that means nothing because you can't interact with any of it. And you know, it
drop it, enemy,
put a cursor on them, and then like a distance marker, and tell you how far away you are from them. And as you approach them, of course, they're all friggin' like in the next town over. So, you know, when you finally get over to them and get on your horse, naturally, because Gilson B. Pontes implemented a full combat, not a full combat, but, you know, a combat mechanic onto this horseback ride. Of course, so every time you come to an enemy
on the horseback now.
No, there isn't. Oh, because okay. As soon as you get to an enemy, the character automatically jumps off the horse. There's a game mechanic where you swing your sword on top of a horse that you literally can't use. Because, yeah, as soon as you're in range of an enemy, your character jumps off the horse and then runs after the enemy.
Why would you make that animation if there's... You know what? Thanks to Chris for dropping another 200 biddies. I don't know how else to... I just...
It wasn't me.
Tai Shogun, tell us more about it.
Yes, Tai Shogun. Okay, so combat, here's where things get real great. So if you remember in the last game, you kind of just swing your sword wildly in the direction of a ninja, and if you hit them before they hit you, then they go, ah! And they, like, fall over.
Is the same sound effect in this?
No. It's a boring sound effect, but that's not what's bad about this. Somehow he made, like... And, you know, if the enemy hits you once, then you die and you have to start like every you actually get penalized for dying pretty substantially by having to swim for a full 2.5 minutes to get back to where to get back to the start of where you were. So,
oh, man,
that's how the last game worked. This game is actually a little punchier, but we'll get to that. In this game, he somehow made the combat so much worse because now. So of course it's because it's a third person adventure game. One stick moves the character, one stick moves the camera. And of course there's no options anywhere. There's only the option to restart or quit. I recommend the second one, but you can't like invert the cameras or anything like that. It's just terrible. Anyways, there are no options. You move the stick and here's the thing. When you're in combat, your character perpetually faces away from the camera, and that becomes a problem because you're supposed to be moving in real, the enemy can just move around, you know, like it's fully like a thing. And it uses this control tack from like, that's, I guess, borrowed from Zelda. And, but the thing about Zelda is that it has a mechanic where you can lock on to the enemy so that the camera gets in the right position for you to attack them. Not in this game. In this game, you have to manually move the camera to where you are directly facing the enemy in order to swing at them. Otherwise, your character will just swing wherever the camera isn't aiming. So you'll end up running after an enemy and, you know, they'll move to the side of you and then you'll just keep attacking the spot where they were until they hit you that one time and you have to start the stage over. Now, the one way that he improved on Shadow of the Ronin, Revenge to the Samurai, is that you no longer have to swim for 2.5 minutes. There's no swimming at all in this game. In fact, it just takes you back to that hub village, and then you just go back into the portal, none of which is explained, by the way. None of this game has no story. Like, the description on the page is the story. There's no text in the game.
You mentioned the scream from Ronin. I do have a clip of that. Let's listen to it.
Oh, yeah.
One more time.
Yeah. I wish that sound effect had stayed. But no, they kind of do this grunt that's like kind of generic. And your character, if you get killed, then... now the enemies laugh at you and it sounds like, like, that's kind of funny, but it's also the game laughing at you is not you laughing at the game. If it was an enjoyable game, maybe it would be different. Anyways. So, you start off back in the hub village, you go back to the stage, you go get killed again. And then, you know, you repeat that process until you quit the game. And also this time around, they aren't ninjas. They're like, there's different kind of enemies, but they're, you know, it's just like another samurai, like a big ogre-y thing. And then, dragons, the exact same dragons.
Same dragon?
Exact same dragon.
Chris wants to know that, how they sound in this game, by the way. So you got to give us the sound effect.
Oh, for the enemies?
Yeah.
Oh, it's just like, yeah, I'll have to like actually. Well, I promised Joe that I would stream this game at some point, so you know, we'll get that footage for you.
Drop it, bitch.
Anyways,
Chris, with another 1,000 biddies, thank you so much. You are absolutely incredible tonight. Thank you very much for the generosity.
Yeah. So yeah, apart from that, like I said, you know. Certain things is a Unity Engine game. I mean, certain things actually look kind of cool. Like, the trees like have this high wind blowing through them at all times, which is kind of wild. But I actually like that look in games, so I actually appreciated that. Sound effects, I mean, there's one, the thing is, I think he just copied and pasted the same soundtrack from Revenge to the Samurai, and all it is drums. It's just drums doing a beat. Like, that's all the music is, besides the intro video, which, again, I think is the same exact music. I'm going to have to check them side by side, but it's very, like, generic, epic, orchestral, like, type music. And, but this game actually, fully utilizes the speaker on your controller.
Really?
Yes. What it does with it is it chirps. A bird chirps at you the entire time. And if you turn down the game audio and you see the wind blowing through the trees and stuff, but you're just still hearing this bird like tweet 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 tweet, you know, just kind of tweeting at you, and it's a very short loop. So it's about 15, maybe 10 to 15 seconds, like repeated over and over and over. And then also that's the sound where the enemy's going, like comes out.
Oh my God.
And then I think like maybe some sword swinging or like some hoof beats or whatever. Thing is, cause there's no options in the game. There's no way to turn it down. So you have to, like, there's no way to disable it either. So you just either have to, like, I guess go into the PlayStation menu and do something, or like stick a set of headphones in it so that you can get some peace and quiet. But it is loud. Like, my girlfriend heard it from the bedroom, the full two bedroom apartment, like across from the controller. She was hearing that bird from like rooms away.
Lord.
So, there's just no end to what this guy will do besides make a video game.
I mean, well, it's our job to give a verdict on this one. So $10 on it. What do you think of Tai Shogun, The Rise of Emperor?
No, obviously don't buy this game. unless you're very funny and you want to play it for other people and just joke about how absurd it is, it actually might be worth the full $10.
What and if Pontus is your hero?
Yes. But you can be a hero while doing terrible things constantly. And I don't know. Like, I almost feel like, here's the thing. You know, and this may be pulling the curtain back a little too much. Nobody has ever talked to Gilson B. Pontus. I've never seen an interview. His most famous critic is a guy on YouTube that I won't name because jealousy. But no, if you Google Gilson B. Pontus, you'll see the other guy. And, you know, he's never talked to him either. He just sends out the games. He sends out these codes and people just react to them. Either this is like a big grift to get himself famous for like being something, because I'm never going to forget his name. That's for gosh darn sure. Or like, I don't know. Like, it's so mysterious, like what his intentions are, if not just trolling. Like, you know, making kind of like anti-games, you know?
Yeah. I mean, we're still talking about him. We're still reviewing Gilson B. Pontus's games.
And I want the next one, too. So there's a thing about it. I don't know. Like, I was excited to check this one out. Obviously, I had no fun playing it. I played it until I was too annoyed to play it.
Oh, jeez. And you want the next one?
And I want the next one, of course. I want to see what he does next. I want to see how much better or worse he can get. I want to see if at some point he actually makes a video game, because this ain't it.
Well, maybe eventually.
Yeah, but he's not going away. He's been doing this for like 7 years now. So I think every year that the PlayStation 4 has been out or something, like, or since like 2015 or 16, he's been releasing these games once a year. So,
damn.
You know, well, we'll see what. We'll see what next year brings.
At least it's not priced as crazy as the other ones were.
No, true. The other ones were like $20, and I think that's really I think that's like screwing people over. So maybe he's realizing some things.
Maybe.
It's one of those things, and I learned this about outsider music, which, you know, like the Shags or Daniel Johnston, or like there's a Texas band called Complete. These people who make the worst music in the world, but they think they're doing real art. They, you know, I think that he obviously Googles his own name all the time. I mean, otherwise he wouldn't put it out there so much. So he probably hears like these criticisms of like his game and stuff. And like, but all that his brain will allow him to take away from it is, oh, I shouldn't have that swimming section next time. Everything else is fine. Like, oh, next time I should have a horse.
Bored.
I don't know. Just guessing. It's fascinating to me.
We spent way too much time talking about this game. We are going to wrap up this episode. Thanks to Tim for being here, chatting with us. Thanks to all of y'alls for being here, hanging out and doing your thing and all that other stuff. I can't believe we spent this long talking about video games.
Gilson, DuPont just does that to a person.
Yeah, Gilson does it to us. So does anyone have any final words for Gilson B. Pontus?
Go take your ass to bed, cause that's what I'm doing, Gilson. Make better games next time.